Hello, Amy. Can you hear me okay?
Hi, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Excellent.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for being here with us today. So for our listeners, Amy is the owner of Matriarch, a gift and bookstore featuring woman-owned businesses in Newport, Rhode Island, as well as the founder of Overseasoned, a culinary retail brand. Her businesses represent her combined passion for food and intersectional feminism. She's been designing and selling apparel and kitchen accessories through her Overseasoned brand since 2017. Merchandise with signature slogans like Smash the Garlic and the Patriarchy and Ice Cream for Reproductive Rights both empower and give back to the community through nonprofit contributions. From aprons and tea towels to adult and baby apparel, there is something fun for cooks and eaters of all ages and sizes. Welcome, Amy. Amy actually used to be my upstairs neighbor when we both lived in Massachusetts. I remember her dropping off treats from new recipes and food and feminism-centered zines. I used to call her the food fairy because she was such an amazing neighbor for me as a little girl with such a huge sweet tooth. And she's also been a huge inspiration for my social justice advocacy work as I get older. Welcome, Amy, and thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. And you were equally an amazing neighbor, just to be able to have somebody to share a love of food and sweets with, and also just to watch everything that you've been doing. And you've been such a big inspiration to me as well. So I'm really honored that you asked me to come on air with you today. I'm very excited to be part of your show.
Thank you so much. To start, could you tell me a little bit more about your business, what kinds of things you sell, how you decide what to curate, and the theme and message behind it?
Yes. So my store is called Matriarch, like you had mentioned in your lovely intro, and it's in Newport, Rhode Island. And as you could kind of surmise from the store name Matriarch, we have a very large focus on woman-owned brands and art by women and books written by women in our store. And you know, I've just always had a passion for feminism, and I sort of bridged my passions of food and feminism when I created my brand Overseasoned in 2017. And so it's just something that I'm always just looking for ways to uplift women's voices. And our slogan that we have printed in our store Matriarch says it's a space that reminds the world that women are here as creators, and they always have been.
I love that so much. Thank you. How did you first start to think to include both food and feminism together as part of your business?
So it kind of was just like a little like lightning strike of inspiration. It was actually a time very similar to today, which is that, you know, yesterday we had the No Kings protest that happened across the country, which I think I saw there was like 7 or 8 million participants across the country.
Right.
And a very similar type of organization. This was January 2017, so it was after Trump was first elected the first term. And so I was at the protests, and I was seeing a lot of signs, and I was really inspired by the creativity. And because I live in the world of food, and I'm a chef and a baker, the tagline just jumped into my mind of smash the garlic and the patriarchy, because of course smashing the patriarchy is paramount to my my central ethos. And so that's kind of how it came together. And then I started designing artwork for this slogan. And then from there, people liked it. And so I started thinking of other ways to bridge food and feminism, for example, Cabernet and equal pay, and just very cheeky puns like this. I think I'm a fan of puns. And if you are too, then you definitely like the store, because we have a lot of puns.
Yeah, I love all of your slogans on all of your apparel. It's all very empowering, but also very cute and food-based. Mm-hmm. Definitely very joyful. I was wondering, what made you want to be an entrepreneur in the first place?
I think, I did go to business school at UMass Amherst. And so I was most interested in like the entrepreneurship seminars that I took there. They didn't have a focus on entrepreneurship. It was more about like marketing or finance or accounting and these other realms. But I was most interested in just leadership. And I think it's not necessarily even like a want to be an entrepreneur, but more of a need because yeah. I think just the way that I'm built and the way that I've always been, even since I was like a kid, like I remember being 9 and just kind of taking charge and wanting to try things and wanting to make things. For example, being your neighbor, I observed you doing the same kinds of things like when you were 7 or 8 and you had a little pop-up table sale outside of the apartment and you call it Harmony's Homemade. And so I was always doing things like that. And so it's more of like an innate personality trait, honestly. But I do feel that I am pretty risk tolerant. And so I am like predisposed to be able to be an entrepreneur because I'm okay taking risks and I like taking risks and I'm excited to try things. Even if I'm the first person doing it, it makes me more excited. And so those are kind of like the big, I'd say, like factors that kind of feed into becoming an entrepreneur. And now that I am, and I have worked for myself exclusively for the last 5 years full time, I started doing my businesses as a side hustle. But now that I have been working for myself exclusively for 5 years, I can say it's definitely the right thing for me. And a lot of people like in the entrepreneurship and the small business world, business ownership world will say like, the worst day of working for yourself still is better than the best day working for someone else. And so that's something that I feel. And so it's kind of how I know I'm in the right place being an entrepreneur.
I love that. Congrats on 5 years of working for yourself. That's amazing.
Thank you.
I was wondering kind of a little bit about your business model. I know you went to business school, but the way that you run your business seems to be very collaboration focused between women and other businesses versus competition in business. So I was wondering how you run your business and why you find it important to put collaboration over competition.
This is a really great question. And definitely something that I'm really passionate about. I think the way that I run my business, where I curate, you know, other complementary brands in my store in addition to mine, I sort of naturally started doing that because when I was coming up and doing my business as a side hustle, I did a lot of pop-up markets, mostly around Boston where I was living at the time when I started, and Providence as well. And so I met a lot of other really cool artisans and makers and artists in that time. And, you know, seeing them, seeing what they were doing and how they do it always kind of informed what I was doing, and I would make adjustments, and we all kind of like, you know, inform and inspire each other. And so when I found the space to open my own store, I thought I already had, you know, quite a nice list of other artisans that I was familiar with that I wanted to uplift their work as well, because it really does all kind of go together and support each other. And I think I feel like I'm going to not have the right paraphrasing of this expression, but it's like, it said that if you want to go far, go together. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just kind of how I feel. That when I, you know, share and showcase the really amazing artwork that other people are doing, it just enhances everything because it makes this sort of inclusive space where you can just feel that everyone's celebrated.
Yeah, I love that. And something I noticed about your store and your business is that it's not just a retail space, but it's also a community space where you have events and you work with other women both in the event hosting and also, like you said, the curating of the actual products. So I was wondering, What's kind of been like your journey of opening a store that isn't just a retail space to sell products, but also a community space? And what kinds of events do you like to host? And I remember when I lived in Massachusetts, you started hosting events through Overseasoned. I remember one that was like cake decorating, and it was matching up with like the moon cycle, and it was a really nice like women's group, and it was really nice. So I was just wondering, how do you think of your events, and why do you like to incorporate community into your business?
Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for that great question. I think, and yes, it was really fun. Like, you know, when I was starting out, when we lived in that multifamily house in Cambridge, Harmony, I was just trying different things. And so at one point, yeah, I did have like maybe like 12 people in my apartment for a pasta making class, which was crazy. But I think it's because like the feeling of being around other people and learning something together, or just chatting while you're rolling out pasta, like that feeling is really good and sticks with you a while. And of course, I, you know, have a store, so I love shopping. And I think there's always, you need to shop for things, you need to buy somebody a gift. Mm-hmm. But the transaction of shopping isn't as deep as, you know, enjoying time with people and learning together. And so I just wanted to offer these events as a way to sort of deepen the experience with the store, because I think that there can be more to it than just, you know, coming in and getting a book, or, you know, looking at some artwork, or, you know, buying a ceramic mug or something like that. Mm-hmm. It goes even further when you can have the opportunity to sit down and do like a watercolor painting class with one of the artists that you could buy their work at the store. Mm-hmm. And the thing that, and I just wanted to be a place, because also this is in the community where I grew up. And so I just also wanted to be a place that could offer people something to do, maybe somewhere that you could go and meet people. And one of the most rewarding things about offering these community events is that I can see people meeting each other, especially if it's somebody who's just moved to Newport and they want to meet new people, and they leave exchanging phone numbers with someone. And I just think that that's like the real kind of spice of life, where that's really what it's all about, you know, how we connect with each other. And so I like being able to offer that as well. And especially because I stalk so many amazing artisans, they all have something to teach and to share. And, personally, and also I think as sort of a global trend, I'm really into doing things analog, and I think other people are too. We had an event in fall 2024 where we did postcard writing to representatives, and the idea of doing something handwritten and just, you know, getting together to do something physical in real time, I think is really powerful right now, and I think it always will be.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely, like, as a kid who went to school during COVID when we were doing so many activities online, having in-person events and activities to do now is just so important for us, and just our social understanding and just building a solid community. I was wondering, how does connection and community between women uplift feminism in your eyes, and why is feminism such an important issue in general? Why is it so important to you?
Yeah, I think that, like I was saying before, like, if you want to go far, go together. You know, I think that there's so much that we can offer each other as women, especially when there are, you know, this administration that wants to marginalize us. It's even more powerful to band together and figure out how can we help each other? How can we resist that? A lot of it, I think, to answer your question, is women in connection is an act of resistance. Because you know, they want us to be separate and scared and minimized. And so I think anytime that I can bring women together in the store to teach each other or collaborate, like you were saying, that to me feels like an act of resistance. And to answer your second question, feminism is so important to me because it really is a human right. It is this, you know, this idea that, you know, women are equal, and that is really central to a lot of the issues that I illustrate to in my designs and in the way that I curate the store, because I think at a basis it's human rights.
Absolutely. And just growing up as like a young girl, seeing someone who had a business with so many slogans and such a strong message of uplifting women, like modeling in your like clothes for kids when I was growing up with like the Root for Women t-shirts, I just felt so empowered as like a young girl witnessing a woman running such an awesome business with these kinds of messages and themes behind it. I was wondering like how you incorporate intersectional issues into your work, because feminism is such like the issue in itself, it relates to so many other social justice issues, and it has been such a long fight, and it has also coincided with other rights for other groups of people. And I was also wondering, how do you define feminism for yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. And first of all, thank you for saying that, because you saying that, you know, seeing me in my business and being part of my business is really probably the greatest compliment that I can get. Thank you so much for saying that. In terms of intersectionality, intersectional feminism is really important, and to me just means remembering that, you know, intersectional feminism means including everybody. So that means including, you know, trans women, women who are immigrants, you know, remembering to incorporate an anti-racist agenda, because another thing that I have on a lot of different, this isn't my tagline, but something that I have on a lot of stickers and artwork at the store is, no one is free until all of us are free. Yeah. And I really believe that, and definitely that is what sort of drives me to also center, you know, like with this recent anti-ICE movement, that is really sort of why I'm so passionate about that, because there's just no way for women to move forward if we are, you know, there's just no way to move forward unless we can help everyone and recognize that everyone has rights.
Yeah, so. Definitely. And like you mentioned with the anti-ICE movement, recently you organized national Ice Cakes Not People bake sales that my club here in Vermont, Community Action for Racial Equity, or CARE, was able to participate in. And we raised over $400 to provide immigrant legal aid in Texas to immigrant families. But thank you so much for organizing that nationally. What was that like, and how did you get the inspiration to organize national bake sales to give money to anti-ICE organizations?
Yeah, it was kind of wild how it turned into a national event, and it was really awesome to be able to collaborate with you on it, and especially because you already have this amazing club that is doing the work, and so it just fit in so naturally for you guys to do that, and that was so cool to do that with you personally. But for the national event, So last year I started doing bake sales at my store. The first one that I did was last March for International Women's Day. We did a bake sale to raise money for Planned Parenthood of Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And for that one, I think we raised like almost $4,000. And so I sort of, you know, because I have this public space, I have my store, and to me, I feel like that's just, I have that like space and access and privilege to be able to welcome people in and host an event and create a means of fundraising. And so that's why I started using bake sales. Obviously, like we've talked about how we both love treats, and so that, you know, I have a penchant for baking, and so that combined with my space just makes having a bake sale a really easy and fun fundraiser for whatever the cause is at the time. In around Thanksgiving, we also hosted one for our local food bank when they were cutting all of the SNAP benefits last November. So I'm a fan of launching a bake sale to raise some money for a very pertinent cause. And, you know, mm-hmm. this January, with the occupation of ICE in Minneapolis, that was really just a crisis that obviously, you know, has been everywhere and is still ongoing, but I just felt like I needed to do something. And so I activated my bake sale model again. But what happened was I shared, you know, my tagline for it, the ice cakes, not people, on Instagram, and people from all over the country. And I posted it saying, who wants to bake for this? Meaning in Newport locally. Mm-hmm. But people from all over the country were responding and saying, can I do this? Can I do this? Can I do this? And so I realized, I was like, okay, like, you know, I've got to figure out a way to kind of like unify this and help people launch their own installation of it. And so I kind of accidentally franchised the idea. But then I was just collecting emails, and I was getting hundreds of emails a day about it, honestly.
Wow.
And I was collecting everybody's names and information and mapping where they were from, and seeing how much interest there was in different cities, and connecting with each other, and putting them all in little email groups with each other. If they were all in Chicago, I connected them all. And so it was a little chaotic, but there's so much passion and enthusiasm in those messages that I received. And then I eventually ended up making a website for the project, because it was just easier to point people to the website and show them, okay, here are the events that are happening. That way, you know, if they were someone from Austin, Texas, they could look and see, is there something already happening, or should I host my own? So that's kind of how it all came together. And I think at this point, so we started doing those bake sales earlier in March, mm-hmm. And they've been kind of like every weekend since. And I think at this point we've had over 30 events, and I think we're up to over $60,000
wow.
right across the events, which is really cool, because you know, for example, your club chose to donate to races, and, you know, there was the events that happened in Boston, they donated to their local support network for immigrants, and every individual bake sale chose to give back to a local organization. And so the amazing thing was that this really highlighted all of these amazing organizations that are doing very specific things for their own communities. And so I think it really kind of showed people, oh, there's things I can do. People are doing this work in my community. Like, I could help them. I could volunteer. I could donate more, you know, and that to me was one of the most powerful parts.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so cool that it's like keeping money in the community and taking it from community members who really do care, or who also just want mm-hmm. to buy a treat because bake sales are yep. fun. But
yes.
I noticed on the Ice Cakes Not People website you had some organizations that people could choose from. I was mm-hmm. wondering, how did you choose those organizations? And like, what main organizations did the money go to? I know you already spoke a little bit to that, but how do you choose which places people could choose to give it to other than their own communities?
Yeah, so when I was making the suggestions, those were mostly like national organizations. And so I did some research and, you know, reading different articles like NPR and stuff, and seeing what were kind of like the top national organizations. So like the National Immigrant Law Center, for example. And then, of course, there's the ACLU, which has chapters in every state. Mm-hmm. But another thing that I did was I spoke to one of my colleagues who lives in Minneapolis, and she gave me a real image of what was happening there. And she gave me suggestions about organizations that were like very Minneapolis and St. Paul specific mm-hmm. to help people there. And so I kind of got some sort of inside on the ground information about that, because a lot of the bake sales did want to also support other cities where they were being hit harder too.
Yeah. I was wondering, because you focus on so many issues, how did you start to notice intersectionality between the topics you were passionate about? And when you started to realize that feminism, which is this thing that you cared so much about, related to so many things, like, was there a moment when you started to really realize the amount of intersectionality between all of these issues?
I don't know if there was a moment. I think mostly just in doing all different kinds of reading. So just like reading books about intersectional feminism and articles and following the work. And when I was at UMass Amherst, I took some classes in women's studies, and that definitely sort of laid a foundation of intersectionality as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. I was wondering, kind of focusing back on the feminism and food, I noticed you've talked a little bit about a lack of celebration for female chefs compared to men in the past. So I was wondering, how have you seen the perception of women in the food industry change and evolve? And what kind of feminist movements within the food scene are there, or issues within that?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting because, like, you know, in past decades or even still kind of leading up to today, there's kind of this image and perception that, you know, men who'd be super successful chefs were like, you know, these gods and like master artisans, right? And then, you know, women who are doing that either at home or, you know, for their grandkids or just doing it, you know, since the beginning of time, that's just what they do. And so to me, you know, that's always just seemed really unfair, like, you know, to have that disparity. And especially, you know, when it comes to like perception in the media and stuff, I think that things have improved. So, you know, I've kind of been like having this be my central issue for, you know, 8 or 9 years at this point. And I think that in terms of, you know, women running restaurants and as chefs, things have improved. And I think, like, you know, when you look at a cooking show now, instead of there being, you know, like 2 or 3, you know, women out of 12, maybe you have more like half, and more, maybe you have more non-binary people represented as well. So I do think that things have improved. But it's just a matter of sort of reclaiming, you know, the ability to be at the top and sort of trying to like stomp out any toxic masculinity in that field. I feel like that is an issue in most fields, sadly, but this is my field, and so that's kind of like where I look.
Right, yeah, that definitely makes sense. I feel like it's kind of, in a way, like a double standard, like women often are the cooks for the household, but if they're not doing it like professionally, if they don't own a restaurant, then they won't be celebrated for it as much.
Yeah.
I was wondering, who have been some influential matriarchs or woman chefs in your life?
Well, I mean, as far as matriarchs, there's of course my mom. The cool thing about my business is that it is kind of a family business, where one of my other matriarchs, my aunt, Mare, who I believe you met, she is also a big force in our space. And she helps me a lot at the store. And they have another sister, Janine, who, so it's my mom and her two sisters. And I've always admired them and how they not only have, you know, been the leaders of their families. In our family, it's always been that sort of the men are more of the quiet behind the scenes people, and the women are really at the forefront. And I think that there's just, you know, there's no coincidence that that's how I grew up and this is what I'm doing now. So I really have only had examples of strong women. And you know, with my mom specifically, growing up, she always did so many different things and would teach herself how to do different things. And to the point where, you know, she is a computer programmer, she is a computer science teacher, she went to school to learn how to do pastry arts and has made dozens of wedding cakes for people. She's a master gardener. She just is like the definition of a multifaceted person. And to me, I feel like that's kind of part of what makes a matriarch, because a matriarch contains multitudes and also can see how those around them contain multitudes as well. So, for example, my aunt is always saying, you know, how she sees being a matriarch is looking around and seeing, how can I uplift other people? What can I do to make your life easier? What can I do to celebrate you? And she really is, you know, when you tell her something about yourself, she remembers it and she celebrates it. And so there's, to me, the idea of being a matriarch is having so much inside you and also seeing that there's so much else around you and sort of bridging those two powers.
Yeah, definitely. And growing up in my family, I definitely have some strong matriarchs, especially on my Filipino side. The women in their family are definitely like the most fiery and strong ones in the family, which is always really empowering to see. I was wondering, how would you define a matriarch, and how would you define the patriarchy? And why uplifting matriarchs is so important and different from the dangers of patriarchy?
Yeah, so patriarchy is, you know, the system that is designed to support men and make sure that men get ahead. And so essentially this is the type of society that we've been living in for, you know, centuries. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, when we talk about patriarchy, that's like the whole system and the way that things work. But then when we talk about a patriarch or a matriarch, this is a person. And so to me, a matriarch is someone, like I said, who leads from a place of like equality and intersectional feminism, for example. So I don't necessarily think that a matriarch is a mother or a grandmother. Historically, they are, like, in terms of our lineage and stuff. But as, like, a character or as a person, I think you can be a matriarch when you look around and see how you can uplift women. And so, you know, as the owner of my store, Matriarch, I do see myself as a matriarch as well, because I'm creating a space that allows women to thrive and am trying to make it easier for women to thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. I was wondering, what might you say to someone who might feel threatened by the idea of feminism, who might think that it means putting women over men versus equality between them?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I do think that there are some misconceptions, right? Like, you know, people, even if you come into the store and you see all of this empowering message uplifting women, you know, we're not saying we hate men. We're not saying we think we're better than men. Mm-hmm. We're just saying we think we're equal. And so I think maybe I would say that, you know, sharing inequality just makes things easier, you know, like the same way that, you know, sharing tasks or sharing in a project together. If you're working on a project with someone, it's easier when you share it and you feel equal. And so that's kind of like the very small, simple version of how it would feel if we had equality. It wouldn't take away from men's success. It would just, I think, make it easier for us to all exist and for all of us to be successful. And there's like so much more to it to say than that, but that's kind of like the boiled down.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for clarifying that. I know some people just aren't exactly sure about what feminism exactly means and if it means that it's threatening men in their positions. But yeah, it definitely just means like everyone gets to be equal instead of one over the other, for sure. I was wondering, so you started Overseasoned as a handmade monthly recipe zine, which I remember receiving as your neighbor, and they were just these little zines with like recipes that you hand wrote with like metallic paper, and I just really loved those. And I was wondering, what prompted you to start making those zines? And then, since you managed Overseasoned as a side hustle for a few years, was there a moment that told you it was time to go all into your business?
Yeah. So for the zines, I love that you remember the metallic paper, because it was a very And I'm glad because it was a choice, and I was like, it made it harder to use that paper, but I loved it. So I'm glad that it made a difference.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I like a little bit of sparkle. So, but the reason that I did it that way was because, you know, I've always been cooking. I've always been really passionate about food, and I found that I was cooking a lot, you know, eating a lot, like, you know, be inspired by a restaurant to go home and try to make the recipe myself. And, you know, at the time, this is probably like 2015, there's so many food blogs. And so, and I thought I could make a food blog, but, you know, there's just so many, and I wanted to sort of differentiate myself and, I guess, again, lend to that analog feeling that we've talked about a few times. And so I decided to just do the handwritten vibe in a zine, because it also reminded me of how, you know, people pass down recipes in families, especially in my family. I just remember being really in awe of my grandmother's cursive writing, which is so pretty. And if you look at my zines, my writing is not pretty, but I do like the expression of handwriting. So that was how I decided to produce my work that way. And it was really fun because every month I would do maybe like 10 recipes. And so it was a lot of work, but it was something unique and packageable. And like you said, you know, you could hang on to them. And some friends even still say, oh, I made this recipe from, you know, they have the zines in their kitchen. So it's nice to have a tangible thing sometimes, I think. And then your second question about, you know, going off on my own, my business had just gotten so busy that it was taking all of my free time, just absolutely just running around the clock, trying to fulfill my orders. Mm-hmm. And I also had a lot of wholesale clients at the time that was really growing. And so just the amount of time that I was needing to spend on it just showed that it was there, because, you know, if I'm already working an extra 40 hours a week on my side hustle, it's that alone, you know, the balance of time showed me that it was viable. And of course it did feel like a risk, because you never know. Even today, I don't know what's going to be viable in a couple years or even a couple months, but, it did turn out to be, something that, was sustainable to do on my own as my full time job.
That's amazing. And seeing that transition from like having a side business to making it your like entire living was just so awesome to watch. And I was wondering, like, when you started hosting events with Overseasoned, how did you start making those community events and connections, and why did you start hosting those, and what kinds of community events did you start hosting?
So that was like when I was still living in Cambridge, and I kind of just, you know, I've always loved like doing cake decorating, and I've done wedding cakes for people and stuff. And I don't know, maybe people started asking if I would do workshops like that. And so then I just thought, okay, let me try that out. And I worked with some other community spaces that were in Somerville that aren't around anymore, but made it easy to just get in there and host an event. And I also was doing the full moon circles, which were kind of focused around like reflection and with some yoga as well. So, and I did the pasta making classes, like I mentioned. I kind of was building my community in the Boston area, especially around like food. I think if you're into, people who are into food will find each other. And so that was kind of what's happening, is that people were finding me because I was putting foodie puns on stuff. And so like, oh, this is a food person. Let me see what she's up to. So that's kind of, and I think that's just kind of how you can build any community, is like you put yourself out there, you say, this is what I'm into. And if other people are into it too, they're going to find you and come to you and stick with you.
Yeah, I love that. And just the way that food builds such community among people, like food is such an important part of people's culture and family. Right. It's kind of like a centerpiece for gatherings. I was wondering kind of like what's ignited your love for food in general, and how have you noticed food being such an integral part of just having a community?
Yeah, I think, like, just, you know, growing up in a family where my mom and her relatives just love to make everything from scratch, and mm-hmm. seeing that happen was like an activity, you know, like for example, we I came to your house and we made lumpia with your grandmother and your mom, mm-hmm. and it's an activity, you know, it's not just a means to eat and get your protein for the day. It's like it's a thing to do. And mm-hmm. I always thought that was really fun because I'm just, I'm very activity interested. I like to do stuff, yeah. get my hands dirty. So yeah, like, you know, I just watch, you know, my grandmother making pies and I wanted to roll out the dough. And then when I went to Italy to study abroad, I started learning about pasta making and pizza making. And so these are just kind of things that I'm excited about that I think are fun. And like you said, food really is the center point of gatherings. And even if other people aren't like as excited about the food as I am, it is going to bring people together. And but the other thing that I like about that is the universality of it, that that's just happening all around the world all the time.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I remember when you came over and made traditional Filipino lumpia with my Lula, that was really fun. And definitely yeah. when I was able to go back to the Philippines and learn to make some of the traditional cultural food and see where the food came from, even like the fruit growing on the trees and then like cooking with it and learning the recipes. It was just such a deep personal connection. And it's also just so fun and enjoyable because, well, food is fun. Yeah, I was wondering maybe what was one of your favorite recent events that you've had in your store that's been centered around community and food?
Well, we actually had a lot of our events are kind of more like arts focused. So like I mentioned, like the watercolor painting, or we've even had like a ceramics class in the store, or flower arranging. But last year we even had it was a cheese tasting class. And so we had a woman who, it was like a cheese and Italian language pairing. And so it was like learning some phrases in Italian and pairing them with the cheeses and learning about, you know, where they make that cheese, what part of Italy it was in. And honestly, it's like, if you want to learn something, if you can eat while you're learning it, I think that's going to crystallize it in your brain a little bit better and you're going to retain the information more.
For sure.
Because, yeah, my parents were at the class and my dad still remembers things from it. So, yeah, I thought that was really cool. And then, of course, the actual, you know, bake sale that we had a couple weeks ago was, you know, of course, all about food as a premise. And then you get people in and they're buying something that looks really cool. And then you're talking about these real issues. So it really is kind of just a nice, soft way to bridge, you know, big or small conversations.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like you said, when there's food incorporated into a conversation or a lesson, you're just, because it's engaging multiple senses at the same time, mm-hmm. you're just more likely to remember it and cherish it as an important memory. I know, like, even in my French class at school, sometimes we'll be like learning how to say certain words, but when we cook and eat French food together and learn how to say the recipe in French, that always sticks with me more than just the lessons where we don't have any part of like the French actual culture other than the language around us. So it definitely solidifies it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I was wondering, so when I was able to visit Matriarch, which is your store in Newport, Rhode Island, I noticed you have a lot of books and you consider it a retail as well as a bookstore. So I was wondering, why do you like to curate so many books into your store along with your apparel? And what are some of your favorite authors that you have in your store?
Good question. Well, I think like I was saying before about how, like, you know, much of my knowledge about intersectional feminism has just been doing my own research, like kind of just leading myself through my own kind of like women's studies program and just reading all of these different books, nonfiction and some fiction, like, you know, authors. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to be able to have those books to sort of support all of the messaging and be able to offer a way to go deeper and be like, oh, like read this book and dive into this issue a little more, learn the backstory, learn the history. And especially because I'm really into memoirs, Because, like, you know, if you read somebody's memoir, you're learning about what life was like at that time, you know, going back in history. And so I think there's something really powerful to learn about that and can give you a lot of perspective about how to, you know, kind of continue this fight for equality today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's kind of how I came up with the idea of having books as well. Also, it's really fun because, you know, the store has a message behind it, but it really is just like all of the things that I like. So it's like, you know, we've got the lemons on the wall because I love lemons. We've got books because I love reading. We've got, you know, different artists are the people that I like, you know, the candle scents that I like, you know, so it's just like all these, it's just like, I did bring in all of the things that I'm into. And of course, a lot of other people happen to be into those things too. And so I think that's another thing that feels really good about it is that it feels like it's like a store that's coming from someone's point of view, and not just like, you know, a kind of a random collection of things or things that look like everything else, because it's just coming from my specific interests.
Yeah, I love going into your store because it's kind of like stepping into Amy world, which is just so fun.
Yes, exactly.
And yeah, I was wondering if someone wanted to incorporate what they're passionate about into their work like you have, but isn't exactly sure how, what advice would you give them?
I think that's a really good question. Honestly, I just think that when you're passionate about something and you express it, it will come through and people will feel it. Like, they'll be able to know if you're doing something because everybody else is doing it, or you're, you know, replicating how other people do it, or you are including your own passion. So I would say, you know, just don't be afraid to express yourself and what you're personally passionate about, because it's not going to be like anybody else. And so that feels vulnerable because you're putting your interests and your how you feel into something that is vulnerable. But ultimately, it's really worth it to be vulnerable and to share, oh, I'm really passionate about this, because it goes a long way and people feel really excited about it when they can tell you're passionate about it.
Yeah, definitely. And I can definitely tell with you, you just care so much and you find so much meaning and joy and purpose in what you do. So it really just radiates and beams that you can really just see that you absolutely care about what you do. So it just makes everyone want to be a part of it.
Right.
To end on a fun note, I was wondering, what is one of your favorite recipes lately?
Ooh. This is a really good question. Let's see. Okay, so I think it's just because it's like, you know, feeling like it should be spring, it's actually pretty cold, but I really follow my cravings. So I've you know, started to get springy and that made me really think about strawberries. And so I've been trying to come up with like anything that's like strawberries and cream related. So I was like working on like a strawberry tiramisu. Last weekend, and it kind of came out, it didn't come out exactly how I wanted it to, but I kind of just keep doing, you know, trying to bring those ingredients together to see what comes out. Like, okay, maybe I'll put some strawberries and scones this week or something like that. And I really just kind of get obsessed with an ingredient and like just try to do whatever I can with it. Like earlier in the winter, it was salmon and dill. Like, how can I combine dill in all different kinds of ways? Sometimes it's, you know, pickles. It really is just, I think it's fun to just follow the whims of like, oh, I'm craving that. And then, because you're going to be so satisfied when you actually make what you're craving.
Yeah, I love a good food hyperfixation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, if anyone wanted to follow what you do in your work or look more into your business, where should they go?
Okay, so I have, my website is overseasoned.com, and that's kind of the umbrella website, but then I also have a website for my my store, which is matriarchri.com, and both of those are also on Instagram, and my Instagram is overseas and underscore Amy.
Awesome. Thanks. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I always love talking to you and following your work. And actually, as Vermont's first Youth Poet Laureate, I wrote a poem inspired by Amy, her store, Matriarch, and all the matriarchs in our lives that I'll share with you all today before we close out. So this is called Matriarch. When the day is done, she leaves yeast in a bowl, hoping in ritual it will, like her children, grow. When she rises with the sun, ripples in her skin stretch along with her. Wrinkled knuckles knead dough, a silent confession of max volume love. As her hand finds its place in her oven mitt glove, she lets the pan land with care into the oven. She's a mother, a leader, a grandma, and a lover of lovers, writer of words, baker of baked goods, connector of worlds. She's a magic maker, a grand risk taker. She's the family dictator, the knower, the planner. She's the bread baker and the breadwinner, too. She lets her love grow. It festers. She nourishes. She feeds it. She knows that she seeds it. She pulls it out of her oven, her heart. She breaks it into equal pieces, in hopes every woman surrounding and preceding her will taste a nugget of her warm, gold, sunshine lemon love, like she sprinkled on rays from above. She's a generational general, the base of the structure, her energy ephemeral, the iconic mother. She is a legend, living with us. She leaves us a message. You can call me the Matriarch. Thank you so much for everything you do, Amy, and for being here today. And have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and thank you for reading that, too.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
And thank you to our listeners. You're listening to WMRW LP Warren 94.5 FM and streaming live at WMRW.org. And now you're going to hear Crowded Table by the High Women on theme of having food as a centerpiece of community and having people in your home and at your table. This is the High Women.
You can hold my hand when you need to let go. I can be a mountain when you're feeling valley low. I can be a street light showing you the way home. 'Cause you can hold my hand when you need to let go.
While we are